love servitude. He took his torn sleeve gently between the fingers of his right hand and pulled it through them. As the blue and silver fabric left his fingers, there was no tear in it at all. "There," he said. "Understand?" Sophie hobbled back indoors, rather chastened. Wizards clearly had no need to work in the ordinary way. Howl had shown her he really was a wizard to be reckoned with. "Why didn't he turn me out?" she said, half to herself and half to Michael. "It beats me," said Michael. "But I think he goes by Calcifer. Most people who come in here either don't notice Calcifer, or they're scared stiff of him." Chapter 6, in which Howl expresses his feelings with green slime. Howl did not go out that day, nor for the next few days. Sophie sat quietly in the chair by the hearth, keeping out of his way and thinking. She saw that, much as Howl deserved it, she had been taking out her feelings on the castle when she was really angry with the Witch of the Waste. And she was a little upset at the thought that she was here on false pretenses. Howl might think Calcifer liked her, but Sophie knew Calcifer had simply seized on the chance to make a bargain with her. Sophie rather thought she'd let Calcifer down. This state of mind did not last. Sophie discovered a pile of Michael's clothes that needed mending. She fetched out thimble, scissors, and thread from her sewing pocket and set to work. By that evening, she was cheerful enough to join in Calcifer's silly little song about saucepans. "Happy in your work?" Hal said sarcastically. "I need more to do," Sophie said. "My old suit needs mending if you have to feel busy," said Howl. This seemed to mean that Howl was no longer annoyed. Sophie was relieved. She had been almost frightened that morning. It was clear Howl had not yet caught the girl he was after. Sophie listened to Michael asking rather obvious questions about it, and Howl slithering neatly out of answering any of them. "He is a slitherer outer," Sophie murmured to a pair of Michael's socks. "Can't face his own wickedness." She watched Howl being restlessly busy in order to hide his discontent. That was something Sophie understood rather well. At the bench, Howl worked a good deal harder and faster than Michael, putting spells together in an expert but slapdash way. From the look on Michael's face, most of the spells were both unusual and hard to do. But Howl would leave a spell midway and dash up to his bedroom to look after something hidden and no doubt sinister, going on up there, and then shortly race out into the yard to tinker with a large spell out there. Sophie opened the door a crack and was rather amazed to see the elegant wizard kneeling in the mud with his long sleeves tied together behind his neck to keep them out of the way, while he carefully heaved a tangle of greasy metal into a special framework of some kind. That spell was for the king. Another overdressed and scented messenger arrived with a letter and a long, long speech, in which he wondered if Howl could possibly spare time, no doubt valuably employed in other ways, to bend his powerful and ingenious mind to a small problem experienced by his royal majesty, to wit, how an army might get its heavy wagons through marsh and rough ground. Howl was wonderfully polite and long-winded in reply. He said no, but the messenger spoke for a further half hour, at the end of which he and Howl bowed to one another and Howl agreed to do the spell. "This is a bit ominous," Howl said to Michael when the messenger had gone. "What did Solomon have to get himself lost in the waste for? The king seems to think I'll do instead." "He wasn't as inventive as you, by all accounts," Michael said. "I'm too patient and too polite," Howl said gloomily. "I should have overcharged him even more." Howl was equally patient and polite with customers from Porthaven. But, as Michael anxiously pointed out, The trouble was that Howl did not charge these people enough. This was after Howl had listened for an hour to the reasons why a seaman's wife could not pay him a penny yet, and then promised a sea captain a wind spell for almost nothing. Howl eluded Michael's arguments by giving him a magic lesson. Sophie sewed buttons on Michael's shirts and listened to Howl going through a spell with Michael.
"I know I'm slapdash," he was saying, "but there's no need for you to copy me. Always read it right through, carefully first. The shape of it should tell you a lot, whether it's self-fulfilling or self-discovering, or simple incantation, or mixed action and speech. When you've decided that, go through again and decide which bits mean what they say and which bits are put as a puzzle. You're getting on to the more powerful kinds now. You'll find every spell of power has at least one deliberate mistake or mystery in it to prevent accidents. You have to spot those. Now take this spell."
Listening to Michael's halting replies to Howl's questions and watching Howl scribble remarks on the paper with a strange, everlasting quill pen, Sophie realized that she could learn a lot too. It dawned on her that if Martha could discover the spell to swap herself and Letty about at Mrs. Fairfax's, then she ought to be able to do the same here. With a bit of luck, there might be no need to rely on Culcifer. When Howl was satisfied that Michael had forgotten all about how much or little he charged people in Porthaven, he took him out into the yard to help with the king's spell. Sophie creaked to her feet and hobbled to the bench. The spell was clear enough, but Howl's scrawled remarks defeated her. "I've never seen such writing," she grumbled to the human skull. "Does he use a pen or a poker?" She sorted eagerly through every scrap of paper on the bench and examined the powders and liquids in the crooked jars. "Yes. Let's admit it," she told the skull. "I snoop, and I have my proper reward. I can find out how to cure foul pest and abate whooping cough, raise a wind and remove hairs from the face. If Martha had found this lot, she'd still be at Mrs. Fairfax's." Howl, it seemed to Sophie, went and examined all the things she had moved when he came in from the yard, but that seemed to be only restlessness. He seemed not to know what to do with himself after that. Sophie heard him roving up and down during the night. He was only an hour in the bathroom the next morning. He seemed not to be able to contain himself while Michael put on his best plum velvet suit ready to go to the palace in Kingsbury, and the two of them wrapped the bulky spell up in golden paper. The spell must have been surprisingly light for its size. Michael could carry it on his own easily with both his arms wrapped round it. Howl turned the knob over the door red down for him and sent him out into the street among the painted houses.
"They're expecting it," Howl said. "You should only have to wait most of the morning. Tell them a child could work it. Show them. And when you come back, I'll have a spell of power for you to get to work on. So long."
He shut the door and roved round the room again.
"My feet itch," he said suddenly. "I'm going for a walk on the hills. Tell Michael the spell I promised him is on the bench, and here's for you to keep busy with."
Sophie found a grey and scarlet suit, as fancy as the blue and silver one, dropped into her lap from nowhere. Howl, meanwhile, picked up his guitar from its corner, turned the doorknob green down, and stepped out among the scudding heather above Market Chipping.
"His feet itch," grumbled Culcifer.
There was a fog down in Porthaven. Culcifer was low among his logs, moving uneasily this way and that to avoid drips in the chimney.
"How does he think I feel, stuck in a damp grate like this?"
"Then you'll have to give me a hint at least about how to break your contract," Sophie said, shaking out the grey and scarlet suit.
"Goodness, you're a fine suit, even if you are a bit worn. Built to pull in the girls, aren't you?" I have given you a hint,
Calcifer fizzed.
Then you'll have to give it me again. I didn't catch it,
Sophie said, as she laid the suit down and hobbled to the door.
If I give you a hint and tell you it's a hint, it will be information, and I'm not allowed to give that,
Calcifer said.
Where are you going?
To do something I didn't dare do until they were both out, Sophie said. She twisted the square knob over the door until the black blob pointed downward. Then she opened the door. There was nothing outside. It was neither black, nor grey, nor white. It was not thick or transparent. It did not move. It had no smell and no feel. When Sophie put a very cautious finger out into it, it was neither hot nor cold. It felt of nothing. It seemed utterly and completely nothing.
What is this?
She asked Calcifer. Calcifer was as interested as Sophie. His blue face was leading right out of the grate to see the door. He had forgotten the fog.
I don't know, he whispered. I only maintain it. All I know is that it's on the side of the castle that no one can walk around. It feels quite far away.
It feels beyond the moon, said Sophie. She shut the door and turned the knob green downward. She hesitated a minute and then started to hobble to the stairs.
He's locked it, said Calcifer. He told me to tell you if you tried to snoop again.
Oh, said Sophie. What has he got up there?
I've no idea, said Calcifer. I don't know anything about upstairs. If you only knew how frustrating it is, I can't even really see outside the castle. Only enough to see what direction I'm going in.
Sophie, feeling equally frustrated, sat down and began mending the grey and scarlet suit. Michael came in quite soon after that.
The king saw me at once, he said.
He looked round the room. His eyes went to the empty corner where the guitar usually stood.
Oh, no, he said. Not the lady friend again. I thought she'd fallen in love with him, and it was all over days ago. What's keeping her?
Calcifer fist wickedly.
You got the signs wrong. Heartless Howl is finding this lady rather tough. He decided to leave her alone a few days to see if that would help. That's all.
Bother, said Michael. That's bound to mean trouble. And here was I hoping Howl was almost sensible again. Sophie banged the suit down on her knees.
Really, she said. How can you both talk like that about such utter wickedness? At least I suppose I can't blame Calcifer since he's an evil demon, but you, Michael.
I don't think I'm evil,
Calcifer protested.
But I'm not calm about it, if that's what you think, Michael said. If you knew the trouble we've had because Hal will keep falling in love like this. We've had lawsuits and suitors with swords and mothers with rolling pins and fathers and uncles with cudgels and aunts. Aunts are terrible. They go for you with hat pins. But the worst is when the girl herself finds out where Hal lives and turns up at the door crying and miserable. Hal goes out through the back door and Calcifer and I have to deal with them all.
I hate the unhappy ones, Calcifer said. They drip on me. I'd rather have them angry.
Now let's get this straight,
Sophie said, clenching her fist knobbly in red satin.
What does Hal do to these poor females?
I was told he ate their hearts and took their souls away. Michael laughed uncomfortably.
Then you must come from Market Chipping. Hal sent me down there to blacken his name when we first set up the castle. I said that sort of thing. It's what aunts usually say. It's only true in a manner of speaking.
Hal's very fickle, said Calcifer. He's only interested until a girl falls in love with him. Then he can't be bothered with her.
But he can't rest until he's made her love him, Michael said eagerly. You can't get any sense out of him until he has. I always look forward to the time when the girl falls for him. Things get better then.
Until they track him down, said Calcifer.
You'd think he'd have the sense to give them a false name, Sophie said scornfully. The scorn was to hide the fact that she was feeling somewhat foolish.
Oh, he always does, Michael said. He loves giving false names and posing as things. He does it even when he's not courting girls. Haven't you noticed that he's Sorcerer Jenkin in Porthaven and Wizard Pendragon in Kingsbury, as well as Horrible Howl in the castle?
Sophie had not noticed, which made her feel more foolish still, and feeling foolish made her angry.
Well, I still think it's wicked, going round making poor girls unhappy, she said. It's heartless and pointless. He's made that way, said Calcifer.
Michael pulled a three-legged stool up to the fire and sat on it, while Sophie sewed, telling her of Howl's conquests and some of the trouble that had happened afterward. Sophie muttered at the fine suit. She still felt very foolish.
So, you ate hearts, did you, suit? Why do aunts put things so oddly when they talk about their nieces? Probably fancied you themselves, my good suit. How would you feel with a raging aunt after you, eh?
As Michael told her the story of the particular aunt he had in mind, it occurred to Sophie that it was probably just as well the rumours of Howl had come to Market Chipping in those words. She could imagine a strong-minded girl like Letty otherwise getting very interested in Howl and ending up very unhappy. Michael had just suggested lunch, and Calcifer, as usual, had groaned, when Howl flung the door open and came in, more discontented than ever.
"Something to eat?" said Sophie.
"No," said Howl. "Hot water in the bathroom, Calcifer."
He stood moodily in the bathroom door a moment.
"Sophie, have you tidied the shelf of spells in here by any chance?"
Sophie felt more foolish than ever. Nothing would have possessed her to admit that she had gone through all those packets and jars looking for pieces of girl.
"I haven't touched a thing," she replied virtuously as she went to get the frying pan.
"I hope you didn't," Michael said uneasily as the bathroom door slammed. Rinsings and gushings came from the bathroom while Sophie fried lunch.
"He's using a lot of hot water," Calcifer said from under the pan. "I think he's tinting his hair. I hope you left the hair spells alone. For a plain man with mud-coloured hair, he's terribly vain about his looks."
"Oh, shut up," snapped Sophie. "I put everything back just where I found it."
She was so cross that she emptied the pan of eggs and bacon over Calcifer. Calcifer, of course, ate them with enormous enthusiasm and much flaring and gobbling. Sophie fried more over the spitting flames. She and Michael ate them. They were clearing away, and Calcifer was running his blue tongue round his purple lips, when the bathroom door crashed open and Howl shot out, wailing with despair.
"Look at this!" he shouted. "Look at it! What has that one woman, Force of Chaos, done to these spells?"
Sophie and Michael whirled round and looked at Howl. His hair was wet, but apart from that, neither of them could see that it looked any different.
"If you mean me," Sophie began, "I do mean you. Look," Howl shrieked.
He sat down with a thump on the three-legged stool and jabbed at his wet head with his finger.
"Look! Survey, inspect, my hair is ruined. I look like a pan of bacon and eggs."
Michael and Sophie bent nervously over Howl's head. It seemed the usual flaxen colour right to the roots. The only difference might have been a slight, very slight, trace of red. Sophie found that agreeable. It reminded her a little of the colour her own hair should have been. "I think it's very nice," she said.
"Nice!" screamed Howl.
"You would. You did it on purpose. You couldn't rest until you made me miserable, too. Look at it. It's ginger. I shall have to hide until it's grown out."
He spread his arms out passionately.
"Despair!" he yelled. "Anguish! Horror!"
The room turned dim. Huge, cloudy, human-looking shapes bellied up in all four corners and advanced on Sophie and Michael, howling as they came. The howls began as moaning horror and went up to despairing brays and then up again to screams of pain and terror. Sophie pressed her hands to her ears, but the screams pressed through her hands louder and louder still, more horrible every second. Calcifer shrank hurriedly down in the grate and flickered his way under his lowest log. Michael grabbed Sophie by her elbow and dragged her to the door. He spun the knob to blue down, kicked the door open, and got them both out into the street in Porthaven as fast as he could. The noise was almost as horrible out there. Doors were opening all down the road, and people were running out with their hands over their ears. "Ought we to leave him alone in that state?" Sophie quavered.
"Yes," said Michael. "If he thinks it's your fault, then definitely."
They hurried through the town, pursued by throbbing screams. Quite a crowd came with them. In spite of the fact that the fog had now become a seeping sea drizzle, everyone made for the harbour or the sands, where the noise seemed easier to bear. The grey vastness of the sea soaked it up a little. Everyone stood in damp huddles, looking out at the misty white horizon and the dripping ropes on the moored ships, while the noise became a gigantic, heartbroken sobbing. Sophie reflected that she was seeing the sea close for the first time in her life. It was a pity that she was not enjoying it more. The sobs died away to vast, miserable sighs, and then to silence. People began cautiously to go back into the town. Some of them came timidly up to Sophie.
"Is something wrong with the poor sorcerer, Mrs. Witch?"
"He's a little unhappy today," Michael said. "Come on. I think we can risk going back now."
As they went along the stone quayside, several sailors called out anxiously from the moored ships, wanting to know if the noise meant storms or bad luck.
"Not at all," Sophie called back. "It's all over now."
But it was not. They came back to the wizard's house, which was an ordinary, crooked little building from the outside that Sophie would not have recognised if Michael had not been with her. Michael opened the shabby little door rather cautiously. Inside, Howl was still sitting on the stool. He sat in an attitude of utter despair, and he was covered all over in thick green slime. There were horrendous, dramatic, violent quantities of green slime, oodles of it. It covered Howl completely. It draped his head and shoulders in sticky dollops, heaping on his knees and hands, trickling in glops down his legs and dripping off the stool in sticky strands. It was in oozing ponds and crawling pools over most of the floor. Long fingers of it had crept into the hearth. It smelled vile.
"Save me!" Calcifer cried in a hoarse whisper.
He was down to two desperately flickering small flames.
"This stuff is going to put me out!"
Sophie held up her skirt and marched as near Howl as she could get, which was not very near.
"Stop it!" she said. "Stop it at once! You are behaving just like a baby!"
Howl did not move or answer. His face stared from behind the slime, white and tragic and wide-eyed.
"What shall we do? Is he dead?" Michael asked, jittering beside the door.
Michael was a nice boy, Sophie thought, but a bit helpless in a crisis.
"No, of course he isn't," she said. "And if it wasn't for Calcifer, he could behave like a jelly deal all day for all I care. Open the bathroom door."
While Michael was working his way between pools of slime to the bathroom, Sophie threw her apron into the hearth to stop more of the stuff getting near Calcifer and snatched up the shovel. She scooped up loads of ash and dumped them in the biggest pools of slime. It hissed violently. The room filled with steam and smelled worse than ever. Sophie furled up her sleeves, bent her back to get a good purchase on the wizard's slimy knees, and pushed Howl, stool and all, toward the bathroom. Her feet slipped and skidded in the slime, but of course the ooziness helped the stool to move too. Michael came and pulled at Howl's slime-draped sleeves. Together, they trundled him into the bathroom. There, since Howl still refused to move, they shunted him into the shower stall. "Hot water, Calcifer," Sophie panted grimly. "Very hot." It took an hour to wash the slime off Howl. It took Michael another hour to persuade Howl to get off the stool and into dry clothes. Luckily, the grey and scarlet suit Sophie had just mended had been draped over the back of the chair, out of the way of the slime. The blue and silver suit was ruined. Sophie told Michael to put it in the bath to soak. Meanwhile, mumbling and grumbling, she fetched more hot water. She turned the doorknob green down and swept all the slime out onto the moors. The castle left a trail like a snail in the heather. But it was an easy way to get rid of the slime. There were some advantages to living in a moving castle, Sophie thought as she washed the floor. She wondered if Howl's noises had been coming from the castle too, in which case she pitied the folk of Market Chipping. By this time Sophie was tired and cross. She knew the green slime was Howl's revenge on her, and she was not at all prepared to be sympathetic when Michael finally led Howl forth from the bathroom clothed in grey and scarlet and sat him tenderly in the chair by the hearth. "That was plain stupid," Calcifer sputtered. "Were you trying to get rid of the best part of your magic or something?" Howl took no notice. He just sat, looking tragic and shivering. "I can't get him to speak," Michael whispered miserably. "It's just a tantrum," Sophie said. Martha and Letty were good at having tantrums, too. She knew how to deal with those. On the other hand, it is quite a risk to spank a wizard for getting hysterical about his hair. Anyway, Sophie's experience told her that tantrums are seldom about the thing they appear to be about. She made Calcifer move over so that she could balance a pan of milk on the logs. When it was warm, she thrust a mugful into Howl's hands. "Drink it," she said. "Now, what was all this fuss about? Is it this young lady you keep going to see?" Howl sipped the milk dolefully. "Yes," he said. "I left her alone to see if that would make her remember me fondly. And it hasn't. She wasn't sure even when I last saw her. Now she tells me there's another fellow." He sounded so miserable that Sophie felt quite sorry for him. Now his hair was dry, she noticed guiltily it really was almost pink. "She's the most beautiful girl there ever was in these parts," Howl went on mournfully. "I love her so dearly, but she scorns my deep devotion and gets sorry for another fellow. How can she have another fellow after all this attention I've given her? They usually get rid of the other fellows as soon as I come along." Sophie's sympathy shrank quite sharply. It occurred to her that if Howl could cover himself with green slime so easily, then he could just as easily turn his hair the proper colour. "Then why don't you feed the girl a love potion and get it over with?" she said. "Oh, no," said Howl. "That's not playing the game. That would spoil all the fun." Sophie's sympathy shrank again. A game, was it? "Don't you ever give a thought for the poor girl," she snapped. Howl finished the milk and gazed into the mug with a sentimental smile. "I think of her all the time," he said. "Lovely, lovely Letty Hatter." Sophie's sympathy went for good with a sharp bang. a good deal of anxiety took its place. "Oh, Martha," she thought, "you have been busy." So it wasn't anyone in Cesare's you were talking about.
Chapter 7,
in which a scarecrow prevents Sophie from leaving the castle. Only a particularly bad attack of aches and pains prevented Sophie from setting out for Market Chipping that evening. But the drizzle in Port Haven had got into her bones. She lay in her cubbyhole and ached and worried about Martha. It might not be so bad, she thought. She only had to tell Martha that the suitor she was not sure about was none other than Wizard Howl. That would scare Martha off. And she would tell Martha that the way to scare Howl off was to announce that she was in love with him, and then perhaps to threaten him with aunts. Sophie was still creaking when she got up next morning. "Curse the Witch of the Waste," she muttered to her stick as she got it out, ready to leave. She could hear Howl singing in the bathroom as if he had never had a tantrum in his life. She tiptoed to the door as fast as she could hobble. Howl, of course, came out of the bathroom before she reached it. Sophie looked at him sourly. He was all spruce and dashing, scented gently with apple blossom. The sunlight from the window dazzled off his grey and scarlet suit and made a faintly pink halo of his hair. "I think my hair looks rather good this colour," he said. "Do you indeed?" grumped Sophie. "It goes with this suit," said Howl. "You have quite a touch with your needle, don't you? You've given the suit more style somehow." "Huh," said Sophie. Howl stopped with his hand on the knob above the door. "Aches and pains troubling you," he said, "or has something annoyed you?"
"Annoyed?" said Sophie. "Why should I be annoyed? Someone only filled the castle with rotten aspic, and deafened everyone in Port Haven, and scared Calcifer to a cinder, and broke a few hundred hearts. Why should that annoy me?"
Howl laughed. "I apologize," he said, turning the knob to red down. "The king wants to see me today. I shall probably be kicking my heels in the palace until evening. But I can do something for your rheumatism when I get back. Don't forget to tell Michael I left that spell for him on the bench." He smiled sunnily at Sophie and stepped out among the spires of Kingsbury. "And you think that makes it all right?" Sophie growled as the door shut. But the smile had mollified her. "If that smile works on me, then it's no wonder poor Martha doesn't know her own mind," she muttered.
"I need another log before you go," Calcifer reminded her.
Sophie hobbled to drop another log into the grate. Then she set off to the door again. But here, Michael came running downstairs and snatched the remains of a loaf off the bench as he ran to the door. "You don't mind, do you?" he said in an agitated way. "I'll bring a fresh loaf when I come back. I've got something very urgent to see to today, but I'll be back by evening. If the sea captain calls for his wind spell, it's on the end of the bench, clearly labelled." He turned the doorknob green downward and jumped out onto the windy hillside, loaf clutched to his stomach. "See you!" he shouted, as the castle trundled away past him and the door slammed.
"Botheration!" said Sophie. "Calcifer, how does a person open the door when there's no one inside the castle?" "I'll open it for you or Michael. Howl does it himself," said Calcifer.
So no one would be locked out when Sophie left. She was not at all sure she would be coming back, but she did not intend to tell Calcifer. She gave Michael time to get well on the way to wherever he was going, and set off for the door again. This time Calcifer stopped her.
"If you're going to be away long," he said, "you might leave some logs where I can reach them."
"Can you pick up logs?" Sophie asked, intrigued in spite of her impatience. For answer, Calcifer stretched out a blue arm-shaped flame divided into green finger-like flames at the end. It was not very long, nor did it look strong.
"See? I can almost reach the hearth," he said proudly.
Sophie stacked a pile of logs in front of the grate so that Calcifer could at least reach the top one.
"You're not to burn them until you've got them in the grate," she warned him,
and she set off for the door yet again. This time, somebody knocked on it before she got there. It was one of those days, Sophie thought. It must be the sea captain. She put up her hand to turn the knob blue down.
"No, it's the castle door," Calcifer said, "but I'm not sure."
Then it was Michael back for some reason, Sophie thought as she opened the door. A turnip face leered at her. She smelled mildew. Against the wide blue sky, a ragged arm ending in the stump of a stick wheeled round and tried to paw at her. It was a scarecrow. It was only made of sticks and rags, but it was alive, and it was trying to come in.
"Calcifer!" Sophie screamed. "Make the castle go faster!"
The stone blocks round the doorway crunched and grated. The green-brown moorland was suddenly rushing past. The scarecrow's stick arm thumped on the door, and then went scraping along the wall of the castle as the castle left it behind. It wheeled its other arm round and seemed to try to clutch at the stonework. It meant to get into the castle if it could. Sophie slammed the door shut. This, she thought, just showed how stupid it was for an eldest child to try to seek her fortune. That was the scarecrow she had propped in the hedge on her way to the castle. She had made jokes to it. Now, as if her jokes had brought it to evil life, it had followed her all the way here and tried to paw at her face. She ran to the window to see if the thing was still trying to get into the castle. Of course, all she could see was a sunny day in Porthaven, with a dozen sails going up a dozen masts beyond the roofs opposite, and a cloud of seagulls circling in the blue sky. "That's the difficulty of being in several places at once," Sophie said to the human skull on the bench. Then, all at once, she discovered the real drawback to being an old woman. Her heart gave a leap and a little stutter, and then seemed to be trying to bang its way out of her chest. It hurt. She shook all over, and her knees trembled. She rather thought she might be dying. It was all she could do to get to the chair by the hearth. She sat there, panting, clutching her chest.
"Is something the matter?" Calcifer asked.
"Yes, my heart. There was a scarecrow at the door," Sophie gasped.
"What has a scarecrow to do with your heart?" Calcifer asked.
"It was trying to get in here. It gave me a terrible fright. And my heart... But you wouldn't understand, you silly young demon," Sophie panted. "You haven't got a heart."
"Yes, I have," Calcifer said, as proudly as he had revealed his arm. "Down in the glowing part under the logs, and don't call me young, I'm a good million years older than you are. Can I reduce the speed of the castle now?"
"Only if the scarecrow's gone," said Sophie. "Has it?"
"I can't tell," said Calcifer. "It's not flesh and blood, you see. I told you, I couldn't really see outside."
Sophie got up and dragged herself to the door again, feeling ill. She opened it slowly and cautiously. Green steepness, rocks and purple slopes whirled past, making her feel dizzy. But she took a grip on the door frame and leaned out to look along the wall to the moorland they were leaving behind. The scarecrow was about 50 yards to the rear. It was hopping from clump to heather clump with a sinister sort of valiance, holding its fluttering stick arms at an angle to balance it on the hillside. As Sophie watched, the castle left it further behind. It was slow, but it was still following. She shut the door.
"It's still there," she said, "hopping after us. Go faster."
"But that upsets all my calculations,"
Calcifer explained. I was aiming to circle the hills and get back to where Michael left us in time to pick him up this evening.
Then go twice as fast and circle the hills twice, as long as you leave that horrible thing behind, said Sophie.
What a fuss, Calcifer grumbled, but he increased the castle's speed. Sophie could actually, for the first time, feel it rumbling around her as she sat huddled in her chair, wondering if she was dying. She did not want to die yet, before she had talked to Martha. As the day went on, everything in the castle began to jiggle with its speed. Bottles chinked, the skull clattered on the bench. Sophie could hear things falling off the shelf in the bathroom and splashing into the bath where Hal's blue and silver suit was still soaking. She began to feel a little better. She dragged herself to the door again and looked out with her hair flying in the wind. The ground was streaking past underneath. The hills seemed to be spinning slowly as the castle sped across them. The grinding and rumbling nearly deafened her, and smoke was puffing out behind in blasts. But the scarecrow was a tiny black dot on a distant slope by then. Next time she looked, it was out of sight entirely.
Good! Then I shall stop for the night, said Calcifer. That was quite a strain.
The rumbling died away. Things stopped jiggling. Calcifer went to sleep in the way fires do, sinking among the logs until they were rosy cylinders plated with white ash, with only a hint of blue and green deep underneath. Sophie felt quite spry again by then. She went and fished 6 packets and a bottle out of the slimy water in the bath. The packets were soaked. She didn't dare leave them that way after yesterday, so she laid them on the floor and very cautiously sprinkled them with the stuff labelled drying power. They were dry almost instantly. This was encouraging. Sophie let the water out of the bath and tried the power on Hal's suit. That dried too. It was still stained green and rather smaller than it had been, but it cheered Sophie up to find she could put at least something right. She felt cheerful enough to busy herself getting supper. She bundled everything on the bench into a heap round the skull at one end and began chopping onions.
At least your eyes don't water, my friend, she told the skull. Count your blessings.
The door sprang open. Sophie nearly cut herself in her fright, thinking it was the scarecrow again, but it was Michael. He burst jubilantly in. He dumped a loaf, a pie, and a pink and white striped box on top of the onions. Then he seized Sophie round her skinny waist and danced her round the room.
"It's all right! It's all right!"
he shouted joyfully. Sophie hopped and stumbled to keep out of the way of Michael's boots.
"Steady! Steady!" she gasped, giddily trying to hold the knife where it would not cut either of them. "What is all right?"
"Letty loves me,"
Michael shouted, dancing her almost into the bathroom and then almost into the hearth.
"She's never even seen Hal. It was all a mistake."
He spun them both round in the middle of the room.
"Will you let me go before this knife cuts one of us?" Sophie squawked, "and perhaps explain a little?"
"Wee-yup!"
Michael shouted. He whirled Sophie to the chair and dumped her into it, where she sat gasping.
"Last night, I wished you'd dyed his hair blue," he said. "I don't mind now."
When Hal said Letty Hatter, I even thought of dyeing him blue myself. You can see the way he talks. I knew he was going to drop this girl, just like all the others, as soon as he'd got her to love him. And when I thought it was my Letty, I... Anyway, you know he said there was another fella, and I thought that was me. So I tore down to Market Chipping today, and it was all right. Hal must be after some other girl with the same name. Letty's never even seen him.
Let's get this straight, Sophie said dizzily. We are talking about the Letty Hatter who works in Cesare's pastry shop, are we?
"Of course we are," Michael said jubilantly. "I've loved her ever since she started work there, and I almost couldn't believe it when she said she loved me. She has hundreds of admirers. I wouldn't have been surprised if Howe was one of them. I'm so relieved. I got your cake from Cesare's to celebrate. Where did I put it? Ah, here it is." He thrust the pink and white box at Sophie. Onion fell off it into her lap. "How old are you, my child?" Sophie asked. 15 last May Day," said Michael. "Calcifer sent fireworks up from the castle, didn't you, Calcifer?" "Oh, he's asleep. You're probably thinking I'm too young to be engaged. I've still got 3 years of my apprenticeship to run, and Letty's got even longer. But we promised one another, and we don't mind waiting." Then Michael was about the right age for Martha, Sophie thought. And she knew by now he was a nice, steady lad with a career as a wizard ahead of him. Bless Martha's heart. When she thought back to that bewildering May Day, she realized that Michael had been one of that shouting group leaning on the counter in front of Martha. But Howell had been outside in Market Square. "Are you sure your Letty was telling the truth about Howell?" she asked anxiously. "Positive," said Michael. "I know when she's lying. She stops twiddling her thumbs." "She does too," said Sophie, chuckling. "How do you know?" Michael asked in surprise. "Because she's my sister's granddaughter," said Sophie. "And as a small girl, she was not always terribly truthful. But she's quite young and, well, suppose she changes as she grows. She, may not look quite the same in a year or so." "Neither will I," said Michael. "People our age change all the time. It won't worry us. She'll still be Letty." In a manner of speaking, Sophie thought. "But suppose she was telling the truth," she went on anxiously, "and she just knew Howell under a false name." "Don't worry. I thought of that," said Michael. "I described Howell. You must admit he's pretty recognisable. And she really hadn't seen him or his wretched guitar. I didn't even have to tell her he doesn't know how to play the thing. She never set eyes on him, and she twiddled her thumbs all the time she said she hadn't." "That's a relief," Sophie said, lying stiffly back in her chair. And it certainly was a relief about Martha. But it was not much of a relief, because Sophie was positive that the only other Letty Hatter in the district was the real one. If there had been another, someone would have come into the hat shop and gossiped about it. It sounded like strong-minded Letty not giving in to Howell. What worried Sophie was that Letty had told Howell her real name. She might not be sure about him, but she liked him enough to trust him with an important secret like that. "Don't look so anxious," Michael laughed, leaning on the back of the chair. "Have a look at the cake I brought you." As Sophie started opening the box, it dawned on her that Michael had gone from seeing her as a natural disaster to actually liking her. She was so pleased and grateful that she decided to tell Michael the whole truth about Letty and Martha and herself too. It was only fair to let him know the sort of family he meant to marry into. The box came open. It was Cesare's most luscious cake, covered in cream and cherries and little curls of chocolate. "Oh," said Sophie. The square knob over the door clicked round to red blob down of its own accord, and Howell came in. "What a marvellous cake! My favourite kind," he said. "Where did you get it?" I called in at Cesare's," Michael said in a sheepish, self-conscious way. Sophie looked up at Howell. Something was always going to interrupt her when she decided to say she was under a spell. Even a wizard, it seemed.
It looks worth the walk, Hal said, inspecting the cake. I've heard Cesare's is better than any of the cake shops in Kingsbury. Stupid of me never to have been in the place. And is that a pie I see on the bench?
He went over to look.
Pie in a bed of raw onions. Human skull looking put upon.
He picked up the skull and knocked an onion ring out of its eye socket.
I see Sophie has been busy again. Couldn't you have restrained her, my friend?
The skull yattered its teeth at him. Hal looked startled and put it down rather hastily.
Is something the matter? Michael asked.
He seemed to know the signs.
There is, said Howl. I shall have to find someone to blacken my name to the king.
Was there something wrong with the wagon spell? Said Michael.
No, it worked perfectly. That's the trouble, Howl said,
restlessly twiddling an onion ring on one finger.
The king's trying to pin me down to do something else now. Calcifer, if we're not very careful, he's going to appoint me royal magician.
Calcifer did not answer. Howl roved back to the fireside and realized Calcifer was asleep.
Wake him up, Michael, he said. I need to consult him.
Michael threw two logs on Calcifer and called him. Nothing happened, apart from a thin spire of smoke.
Calcifer! Howl shouted.
That did no good either. Howl gave Michael a mystified look and picked up the poker, which was something Sophie had never seen him do before.
Sorry, Calcifer, he said, jabbing under the unburned logs. Wake up!
One thick black cloud of smoke rolled up and stopped.
Go away, Calcifer grunted. I'm tired.
At this, Howl looked thoroughly alarmed. What's wrong with him? I've never known him like this before.
I think it was the scarecrow, Sophie said.
Howl swiveled round on his knees and levelled his glass marble eyes at her.
What have you done now?
He went on staring while Sophie explained.
A scarecrow, he said. Calcifer agreed to speed up the castle because of a scarecrow. Dear Sophie, do please tell me how you bully a fire demon into being that obliging. I'd dearly love to know.
I didn't bully him, said Sophie. It gave me a turn, and he was sorry for me.
It gave her a turn, and Calcifer was sorry for her,
Hal repeated.
My good Sophie, Calcifer is never sorry for anyone. Anyway, I hope you enjoy raw onions and cold pie for your supper, because you've almost put Calcifer out.
There's the cake, Michael said, trying to make peace. The food did seem to improve Howe's temper, although he kept casting anxious looks at the unburning logs in the hearth all the time they were eating. The pie was good cold, and the onions were quite tasty when Sophie had soaked them in vinegar. The cake was superb. While they were eating it, Michael risked asking Hal what the king had wanted.
Nothing definite yet, Hal said gloomily, but he was sounding me out about his brother quite ominously. Apparently, they had a good old argument before Prince Justin stormed off, and people are talking. The king obviously wanted me to volunteer to look for his brother, and like a fool I went and said I didn't think Wizard Solomon was dead, and that made matters worse.
Why do you want to slither out and looking for the prince? Sophie demanded. Don't you think you can find him?
Rude as well as a bully, aren't you? Hal said.
He had still not forgiven her about Calcifer.
I want to get out of it because I know I can find him, if you must know. Justin was great buddies with Solomon, and the argument was because he told the king he was going to look for him. He didn't think the king should have sent Solomon to the waste in the first place. Now even you must know there is a certain lady in the waste who is very bad news. She promised to fry me alive last year, and she sent a curse out after me that I've only avoided so far because I had the sense to give her a false name.
Sophie was almost awed.
You mean you jilted the Witch of the Waste?
Howl cut himself another lump of cake, looking sad and honourable.
That is not the way to put it. I admit I thought I was fond of her for a time. She is in some ways a very sad lady, very unloved. Every man in Ingry is scared stiff of her. You ought to know how that feels, Sophie dear.
Sophie's mouth opened in utter indignation.
Michael said quickly, Do you think we should move the castle? That's why you invented it, wasn't it?
That depends on Calcifer. Howl looked over his shoulder at the barely smoking logs again. I must say, if I think of the king and the witch both after me, I get a craving for planting the castle on a nice frowning rock 1,000 miles away.
Michael obviously wished he had not spoken. Sophie could see he was thinking that 1,000 miles was a terribly long way from Martha.
But what happens to your Letty Hatter, she said to Howl, if you up and move?
I expect that will all be over by then, Howl said absently. But if I could only think of a way to get the king off my back.
I know.
He lifted his fork with a melting hunk of cream and cake on it and pointed it at Sophie.
You can blacken my name to the king. You can pretend to be my old mother and plead for your blue-eyed boy.
He gave Sophie the smile which had no doubt charmed the Witch of the Waste, and possibly Letty too, firing it along the fork, across the cream, straight into Sophie's eyes, dazzlingly.
If you can bully Calcifer, the king should give you no trouble at all.
Sophie stared through the dazzle and said nothing. This, she thought, was where she slithered out. She was leaving. It was too bad about Calcifer's contract. She had had enough of Howl. First green slime, then glaring at her for something Calcifer had done quite freely, and now this. Tomorrow, she would slip off to Upper Folding and tell Letty all about it.
Chapter 8, in which Sophie leaves the castle in several directions at once.
To Sophie's relief, Calcifer blazed up bright and cheerful next morning. If she had not had enough of Howl, she would have been almost touched by how glad Howl was to see Calcifer.
I thought she'd done for you, you old ball of gas, Howl said, kneeling at the hearth with his sleeves trailing in the ash.
I was only tired, Calcifer said. There was some kind of drag on the castle. I'd never taken it that fast before.
Well, don't let her make you do it again, said Howl.
He stood up, gracefully brushing ash off his grey and scarlet suit.
Make a start on that spell today, Michael. And if anyone comes from the king, I'm away on urgent private business until tomorrow. I'm going to see Letty, but you needn't tell him that.
He picked up his guitar and opened the door with the knob green down onto the wide, cloudy hills.
The scarecrow was there again. When Howl opened the door, it pitched sideways across him with its turnip face on his chest. The guitar uttered an awful twang! Sophie gave a faint squawk of terror and hung on to the chair. One of the scarecrow's stick arms was scraping stiffly round to get a purchase on the door. From the way Howl's feet were braced, it was clear he was being shoved quite hard. There was no doubt that the thing was determined to get into the castle. Calcifer's blue face leaned out of the grate. Michael stood stock still beyond.
There really is a scarecrow, they both said.
Oh, is there? Do tell, Howl panted. He got one foot up against the door frame and heaved. The scarecrow flew lumpishly away backward,
to land with a light rustle in the heather some yards off. It sprang up instantly and came hopping toward the castle again. Howl hurriedly laid the guitar on the doorstep and jumped down to meet it.